Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to Ladies Talking Leafs. I'm Chris.
And I'm Syl.
And it's our 50th episode. Yay! And we thought it'd be good to start off the show by giving our new listeners some background on our show and who we are. And it'll be a little bit of a refresher for our regular listeners. And of course, we thank all of our listeners for tuning in.
That's right. And yes, thank you so much. You all have made the last 2 years much more bearable for us. Let's just say that. So a little background on us. We've both been Leaf fans going back to the late 70s, early 80s, since we were wee little girls. Chris and I met through work about 30 years ago, and we connected immediately because obviously we both have this passion for the Leafs and their history. Just a couple of my favorite players going back are Mike Palmateer. I used to love him when I was growing up, and Doug Gilmore. And my favorite player on our current roster is Austin Matthews. And I don't think there'll be too many people who would say that's a bad choice. So
that's for sure. Yes. AM34 has a lot of fans out there, including what he did yesterday for me. And we're recording this on Monday, just so for our listeners know. But when I'm referring to yesterday, it's the Heritage Classic. But my favorite players are Rick Vive was my first favorite player, and then Wendell Clark going into the late 80s, early 90s. And for my current team favorite player, it's Mitch Marner, with Michael Bunting definitely a close second from Scarborough, me being from Scarborough as well. And so in 2019, we decided to launch Ladies Talking Leafs. We thought at the for quite a while, actually, that there really isn't any female representation when it comes to a voice for the female Leaf fan. So we started the show with one show a month, and now we have two shows a month, the first Wednesday of the month, and then 2 weeks into the month, also on a Wednesday. So you can find us on your favorite app, Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts. We're also on Facebook Podcasts and YouTube.
After listening to our show, we would appreciate it if you could leave us a review and a rating. Both Apple and Spotify have a listener option to leave a rating or a review, and it's really important to us because we want to hear your thoughts on the show, and it'll also give us exposure as a source for Leaf content. And we also launched our new website this year, ladiestalkinleafs.com, so you can also check that out too. We have videos there when we were on guests on Hockey Time Machine, and you can find out more about us and the show. And we'll be updating the website with new content more and more as we get into it.
Yeah, so the first thing we're going to be updating it with is we're going to be doing some book reviews related to the Leafs, and we could change it up with reviews on other books that are related to hockey. So look for this on our website later this week.
So we're definitely going to be adding more and more content there. And I think the book reviews will be an interesting ad for you guys to check out.
Yeah. For a hint for our listeners, the first book report is one of my favorite players. So you have a choice of Rick Vive or Wendell Clark.
Yeah. So anyways, it's always good to get a snapshot of a book in case you're interested in maybe reading it, or if you have a friend who's a fan and you think that they might like it also. So now it's time to get into the show. Let's just say it's been an interesting couple of weeks for the Leafs and us fans. So as usual, we're going to start with the good, the bad, and the ugly. Then we're going to roll our Ladies Talking Leafs highlight reel. And in our third period segment, we're going to get into the upcoming trade deadline and what we want and hope the Leafs do on March 21st. So without any further ado, let's talk Leafs.
Good, the bad, and the ugly. Try not to focus on the ugly too much. Anyhow, we're starting off with the good. I actually was thinking about this and for quite a while thinking, okay, probably the only player we haven't highlighted this season so far, and he has done a really good job, he's come out and advertised, is David Kempf. So one of Dubas's good signings from last summer, the other one being Michael Bunting. And 2 years at $1.5 million. Gotta love that. I never heard of him before we picked him up in the summer, which I thought was kind of hilarious that you never heard of this name, David Kempf, at all. But he's very defensive responsible. I looked up some stats on him, the NHL possession metrics on him from hockeyreference.com. 85% of the time he's starting in the D zone. So that's he's basically solidified like a third line checking line for Keefe, which Sheldon Keefe has always been trying to get since he's been the head coach of the Leafs. And it seems it's Kempf, Engvall, and Mikheyev that's been the third line checking line against the top line of the other teams. He's done well he's like a D-zone specialist on the draws, on the faceoff. And it's funny, when he came to the Leafs, they're like saying like, oh, the guy only, I think he only had like one goal last season with Chicago. And Keefe said that he could do more, and he's got 8 goals and 13 assists. So he's done pretty good that way as well. But he averages 14 minutes of ice time per game. He's a PK specialist. Most of the time I've seen him with Marner. And I just think that he's, again, he's not a flashing guy. Flashy guy. And I give him the thumbs up for this past couple of weeks. He just has done his job, and he's done it well.
Yeah, and I have to definitely agree with you there. Having those defensive zone face-offs, I mean, considering, you know, what our overall team defense has been like this year is huge. And the other thing is that they tend to drive play to the other end of the ice. And then our offense can take over up there, which, you know, is been a huge, huge factor for us. And, you know, the ability for our team to score, which, you know, as we've seen over the last while, is really, really important, because if it wasn't for that, like, I don't know how we would have even carrying on right now. So David Kempf has been an amazing ad. Just a question. I thought I heard Elliot Friedman talking. Did he get hurt yesterday?
No, not that I heard of. No,
I thought I heard that he did. But anyways, really? I hope that's not the case.
Hopefully not. That's the last thing we'd need right now.
Exactly.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So it was just a quick thing that I heard just before we came on here. So hopefully he's all right, because Lord knows we cannot handle another injury, especially not one that involves our team defense.
I know Justin Hall, whatever, he got the nose bloodied up. I don't know what
that
happened to him
early on.
And that's
That's it. So my good is Austin Matthews, and not just because he's my favorite player. No. It's because, you know, obviously I'm not going to be going into stats and everything here, because we all know his stats. But what I've seen from him lately is the way he's showing leadership on the ice. I loved the game against Arizona, where he got hooked and he really gave it to the refs. Like, we have not seen that with him, that, you know, any talk back. Like, if you look at other, you know, superstars in the league, I'm not sure McDavid chirps the refs that much, but like Sidney Crosby always has. Wayne Gretzky, like we used to call him Whiner Wayne pretty much. And Mary Lemieux, all of these guys, you know, took leadership in talking to the refs and pointing out when they didn't think the calls were right.
Yeah.
And even, you know, getting more physical and just the way he is on the ice, his demeanor after he scores goals, he's just showing himself to be a real team leader. And I can see him being a captain in our future. I don't know. It could even happen before Tavares, you know, leaves.
Yeah, but that was a discussion last week on The Fan. They had that about maybe it'll be like a San Jose situation, whether or
Well, you know, like a hand, but, like hand it off to somebody who's younger, who's going to be with the team. And I think that he is definitely showing signs that he is ready to take that mantle. And I can't wait to see it. And I wonder if that's a carrot that can be dangled to get him to stay and sign. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I for sure. One thing that I couldn't find the quote again, but basically one thing that was on that road that you're speaking of, showing the leadership and the captaincy possibly, was it was last week sometime. He basically said in through the media, he's like, we got to start playing against these lower teams, he didn't say lower teams, but the non-playoff teams. We got to start showing a little bit more grit or start like playing the way we can against these teams, and basically saying like we should be blowing them out. And that to me, saying that out to the media is something different than just saying it within the room. And
oh, totally.
And when I heard that quote, again, it was in a better way that he did it, that definitely showed the leadership to me. And I said, yes, that's what we want to hear. And yes, that's more like captain-like material there. So yeah, I'm happy he's coming out and saying those things to the media too. And I agree. I think that eventually he this is his team anyways, really. Mm-hmm. And the bottom line is it's his team, and not just because he is obviously the leading scorer in the league now on having 45 goals in that, and just his old demeanor, like you said, and he wants to win. You can see it there. And he loves, he loves the big moments, and he wants to be a difference maker every night. And he is for us. That's why he's our MVP.
Do you think with the whole potential captaincy thing, do you think they could do it sooner than later? Like, depending on what happens this year? I mean, I don't know.
Is
it still too soon?
Yeah, still too soon. We have to wait to the end of the year and see what happens.
Well, no, I mean, obviously it's not going to be in the middle of this year.
No. Yeah.
But I mean, for next season, I just wonder, like, how soon they would, you know, pull the trigger on something like that. Anyway, it will be interesting to see.
That's a very touchy, kind of difficult situation there. But
That's true for a whole lot of reasons.
Yeah.
Hometown boy and everything notwithstanding.
Yeah, it's another show. We can talk about that too.
Another topic for another time. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So let's move on to the bad then. So what's your bad, Chris?
So my bad is no killer instinct. It's kind of leading into the ugly actually. But other than Austin Matthews, there's no it factor on this team right now. They have not, as a group, they haven't got that killer instinct built yet. And I mean, I looked up Brendan Shanahan's after the playoff loss and their season ending media availability. I looked up Shanahan's quote here, and he says, I'm just going to read it. He just said, there's a killer instinct that is missing that we need to address, whether that's externally or just figuring out a way for our guys to get over that hump. That's something we have to address, certainly as a team. And we have to really be honest with ourselves, and we have to figure out a way that we can support the players and get them over that hump. And then Sheldon Keefe, after that says, there's an identity piece that goes with the killer instinct, and that's something that can be cultivated throughout the season. I thought we had done that for last season and done a good job of that in taking control of moments. And and that's all he said there. But throughout the season was the key there. I thought to myself, well, you know, we're almost at the end of the season now, the following season. And have we built anything still? I don't, like, as a group for Killer Instinct, I don't know. I mean, maybe a little bit at times during the season, but I just don't, I don't see that we have it. And it's almost like, especially because to me, the Killer Instinct these past 2 weeks, we would have won all these games against against these non-playoff or close to non-playoff teams. And we didn't, all the perf, which leads me into the ugly, but I'm not going to get into that yet. So, I just don't think that the, when it comes to the coaching to get this Killer Instinct, I don't know. I don't know what, whether it be on the ice, off the ice, I don't know how they're going to get these players to, I mean, what more motivation do they need? I don't think now they're not going to get into the first. I mean, it's still close, but they're not going to get this goal of first place in the division.
Yeah, that's going by the wayside pretty quickly right now. I know, I guess, you know, it is sort of the dog days of the season right now. They don't have any excuses anymore, though. Like, you know, before they had the break, they had the COVID, they had all of these things. They don't have those excuses anymore. The only thing I'm hanging on to is that, okay, now's not the time when we want to be peaking. You know, if they don't turn this around pretty quickly, they're going to be, fighting for a playoff spot. You know, it's like I look at, for example, a team like Boston, who's basically been kind of hanging around that wild card for the longest time, and now they're turning it on, you know? So, yeah, I think it's time that they kind of turn a corner there. I'm still hopeful, being the optimist that I am on this on this show, that they will get it together when it counts.
We always have hope. We always have hope because we're Leaf fans, right? We love the team and we just want, but they, I don't know, it's frustrating, obviously, and I'm sure. And I think within the room, too, like certain players are frustrated as well.
I guess that brings me to my bad.
Yeah.
Which is, again, it's Austin Matthews related, but it's basically how he just does not get the calls. He is languishing towards the bottom of the league for penalties drawn. And then you've got Connor McDavid, who's basically at the top. And he is every bit the same superstar. And how is it that this guy can basically get, you know, beaten and hooked and grabbed, and like, for example, in that Arizona game, and right in front of the referee, and they don't call it? Like, I know he's a big guy and he's strong, but, you know, I think that he's starting to get frustrated too, because I know these guys, they say they don't listen to the media, but he knows. Because it's been out there and it's a topic of discussion that he just doesn't get calls, and he doesn't draw as many penalties as a player of his caliber probably should. So I wonder if that's part of the reason why.
Because there's breaking news. This is the first time that this has happened on our podcast.
Oh my goodness.
Matthews has been suspended for 2 games for that cross check.
Okay. So I'm just going to say, well, that that leads into what I was just going to say, that that's probably where that frustration boils over, because Darlene was basically, that's cross-checking BS. Him all over the place.
Yeah.
Right? And he got frustrated and he got his hands up a little bit higher than he should have. But this is what happens when the refs don't call stuff. You know,
exactly.
Players decide to take it, you know, on themselves to rectify the situation. And we all know that the retaliatory penalty usually is the one that gets called and is the one that's going to be the most egregious. And that's what happened. And yeah, no I points. Think that is funny, you know, the breaking news that you mentioned, that, you know, since it happened, I took note of how quickly everybody jumped on the fact that he should be suspended.
Oh yeah.
Now I just
on our Twitter account. I tweeted out saying, "Oh yeah, it's going to be a 10-game suspension because he's a Leaf."
100%.
Yeah.
And but I don't recall other stars who've done stuff, because hello, they all have, that they are, you know, they're apologists for everyone else, but because it's a Leaf, it's like sure. It's like the media and everything is like the hockey dad who coaches his son, who doesn't want to look like they're playing favorites. So then they go all totally the other way.
No, and you look,
and jump all over it more.
I guess there's another example. There's so many examples that have gone on Twitter that I've seen replays on. But I mean, you look at, I guess, Max Pacioretty. Of the Knights, he basically punched Chris Letang in the back of the head. This was last week sometime in a game. And Letang clearly couldn't see this punch coming, but he didn't get nothing for that. Punching him in the head, it's fine. It's fine. But I guess for Austin Matthews, I guess he can take a couple of, he took one cross check. I know that. Like you said, it's the referee not taking control of the situation. I mean, there's only so much a person can take. And then I do believe that, like, Matthews was trying to get the guy's shoulder. And obviously it went to the neck or head area.
Yeah.
Although, never want that, but.
No, and everyone's saying that it was a direct hit. But to me, it didn't look totally direct, but.
No.
It wasn't a total slide up the arm kind of situation either.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not saying that he shouldn't be suspended for that. But, you know, I've just never seen this kind of scolding that happens, you know, for any other team. So,
and even going back to that Arizona game where there was the non-call on the overtime winning goal where there's clearly interference. Chychrun, I guess, did on Matthews. And then, like, even before that, a second before that, like, Matthews could have just dropped his stick too, and Chychrun would have been holding his stick, basically. Matthews would have just let go of it, and, like, I mean, the evidence would have been there. But you just, I don't know, you just wonder what these referees are. Like, now they have four. Back in the day, like, we used to have the one referee. I think they were doing a better job, personally, when there was one referee.
Yeah.
Now we have too many of them, and it's worse.
And
they're, like, staring right at somebody getting a cross check or, boarding, whatever. It's ridiculous. I don't know. Anyways.
I mean, people are starting to speak out. Last week, they spoke out in Colorado as well. So, you know, some of the stars are starting to say something, and I think they should. I think that's a good thing. So, anyways.
Do you think two games is, I was thinking you only get a game, but.
I don't know. I think that if he was not a Leaf, it would have been
one game. Yeah. Yeah. Because I mean, then I started looking back to the whole Spezza thing earlier in the season where he got six games.
That was also ridiculous.
That was ridiculous. And then I thought to myself, well, if it was that ridiculous for Jason Spezza, then he's like, Matthews is probably going to at least get a couple. It's not just going to be a fine or anything like that. Because they're always, and the fact that it was a big event and everybody was watching, you know, and I think that has
100%.
I thought for the league, but this player safety, I don't know. Anyways, we'll move on to the ugly. So for me, the ugly was every game played in the last 2 weeks. I don't really want to get in. I've written down all the scores here, but I'm not going to go through them. I just think it was horrendous. The fact that. Like, I mean, in the Vancouver game, we lost 6-4. We were leading into the third period. We give up the lead. And against the Columbus Blue Jackets, we end up, like, we're blowing leads, basically, again. We had a 3-0 lead in that one, which was big. We end up winning 5-4, but, I mean, we had the lead. It shouldn't be that hard. All these teams are non-playoff teams. Seattle, again, we had the lead. And we ended up winning, but we blew the lead. And then, of course, there's this Heritage Classic game that we played yesterday against the Sabres. And one thing I will say about the Heritage Classic, I did like the players' intro with their coveralls on. And
I thought that was really cool.
On a positive in the ugly segment here. I thought that was all the stuff that the players did beforehand and just the entrance and that. And I like Marner now has this agreement with Oakley sunglasses. So he was, I think it was Kerfoot that had, they were showing off some of the different sunglass looks, which were kind of cool. But yeah.
I actually liked Shanny and Dubas's little matchy outfits also. They looked very sharp.
Yeah. Yeah. But
but they didn't look happy.
Yeah.
They were well-dressed, unhappy
men. That's for sure. Yeah. Yeah. They were very straight-faced. And I mean, in the last six straight games, they've allowed 4-plus goals, which is kind of leading into what you wanted to talk about.
That's right.
I mean, it's...
Obviously, the goaltending has been ugly for a while.
Yeah.
That's basically no shock. I'm not breaking any news by saying that. I just think that, you know, it's one of those situations where if you keep trying to do the same thing over and over and over again, expecting a different result, that's the definition of insanity. So it's no wonder we're all so insane about this. But I'm looking at the coaching now. You know, one thing I was thinking of is that, you know, Freddie, if we're going back to him, you know, was so steady for us for a long time. Then Steve Briere comes in and things are not as steady after that. And I'm kind of wondering if he has, you know, some responsibility to take in this matter, because if you look at Freddie now, he's doing quite well and has gotten his game back. I think that, you know, Keith said something about, you know, when they're talking about Mrazek, about, you know, they have to support him to help him get his game back. And that's a big part of the coach's job. With that also is the coaching of the defense, because the collapsing that, and I don't know if it's that the players, if they are trying to coach them properly, but the players just don't trust the goalies right now, in particular Mrazek. So they're doing crazy things like collapsing in front and, you know, not taking the right man and not getting, you know, taking the body and
the
trying to get their sticks in, but it's not working.
Yeah.
So like at some point, you know, the coaching staff has to support these players better. And if you've got a struggling goaltender, what are they doing to help him get his game back?
Yeah, because it's been more than long enough now that they've had time to try and get his game back since coming back from injury. Mm-hmm. Like he came back in January. And I don't know. I really don't know what this goaltending situation, what's going to come of it. We're in tough with the salary cap. And this is really, I was listening, I think it was on The Fan and Elliot Friedman, like you mentioned earlier, but I think it's really put a wrench in a situation that Kyle Dubas didn't think that he'd have a problem in the goaltending. And I don't know. But then, like, Mrazek, I mean, I wasn't a fan of the move to begin with. We've said it before.
I was thinking about that before we came on here.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't a fan in the summertime when that happened. But still, I think now, like, he's not as bad as, and I don't even think the pressure that comes with being a goalie for the Leafs, like, Freddie was great with that. To me, mm-hmm. He was the type, he had that demeanor that he could handle it, and nice and quiet and steady Dane there that he is. And he just did his job as good as he could. And he did it well in my opinion anyways. But this guy, I don't think he's realized how much. And now with Campbell being out, it's even more pressure on him, and the fans getting on him doesn't help that, I don't think, too.
No.
On top of it all, but I mean,
although I mean, we have seen fans get on goalies way worse than either of these guys have had. So, like, let's just say that they're not getting beat up as much as some people would like to think.
Yeah. But for sure. I mean, what are you going to, as a team? The only way to get around it, really, although that goal yesterday, the one that was an odd angle goal, which ended up being the game winning one for the Sabres, was awful. But the only way to get around it is to rally around the guy and play better team defense, at least try to, and keep these leads, like 3-0. I mean, come on. Like, I mean, there has not all of them are the goalies issue, like to say that they, I mean, a lot of them were, but not all of them are. So,
the other thing that I thought of too a little bit is that it takes a special kind of goaltender to play in front of a team that plays this style of play. I mean, you basically need Vasilevsky, you know, and we don't have that.
Yeah.
So it's a question of the goaltending not matching the type of team we have. Also, I think there's a point there as well, but where, like, there's no way we're going to pick up something like that at the deadline, you know, like that is something that needs to be developed from within. And we just have not been able to develop a goaltender. And that's a real big issue. And that's something that goes back from before Dubas taking over. You know, this is like something that should have already been in the, you know, works, because it takes time for goaltenders to develop.
And a couple of them that, I mean, considering the position he was put in, that Erik Källgren, the Swedish player, a goaltender, he played pretty well the other night. I think he's going to get the next start too versus Dallas.
Yeah, well, it should be interesting. But I actually remember watching him in the preseason thinking that he looked pretty good. Mm-hmm. So I do recall that I thought that he looked decent, and I thought he could be given a shot, but we'll see what happens, I guess. But
yeah. All right. So anyhow, enough with the negativity for now. We're going to move on to the Ladies Talking Leafs highlight reel. Let's roll it.
All right. So we do have some good things that happened over this little stretch of games. In the number 3 spot, we have Nick Robertson. He scored his first NHL goal versus the Canucks and showed his speed on a 2-on-1 with Nylander. He took the pass and ripped it past goalie Thatcher Demko. He definitely was a spark plug on that line, I thought, and he definitely looks like he belongs in the NHL. So I was actually a little surprised that he was scratched from the game yesterday. I'm not really sure why that is. Maybe because of experience, not playing too many outdoor situations or what, I don't know.
But, I guess they wanted Spezza in there, right? So somebody had to come out, and it's a difficult situation. Like Dermott didn't play either, which, I mean, to me, it should have been Liljegren that sat. But anyways, because I don't like the way Liljegren's been playing. It's anyways, we're going to talk about Nick Robertson a little bit, because it was his first career goal. And in the NHL, he did score in the playoffs in the bubble a couple of years ago versus Columbus. But this is his first regular season career goal. And yeah, I hope he gets back. I think he'll get back in there for the game versus Dallas to play against his brother.
So that should be interesting. His brother's been lighting it up.
Man. Oh, yeah. Two games in a row with a hat trick? That's unbelievable, right? Maybe he can, tomorrow night, he can lay off of it a bit. Nick can ask him to take it easy and let Nick score some goals on it. But yeah, it's great for the kid. And you can see the excitement that he has and the energy he brings on that line. And it's definitely, he needs to play further up in the lineup. Fourth line for a bit.
He's wasted down there.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Okay. So number 2, we have in our Ladies Talking Leafs highlight reel is Wayne Simmons' 1,000 game celebration. That was a very special night before the game versus Seattle. Coming from Scarborough and from what his dad said in an interview, they supported Wayne, but it was all Wayne doing the work and pushing himself to be the best and make the NHL. But yeah, I just thought it was great to have his family there and the video that they did for him and the silver stick. And then the one of the best parts I liked was when Kyle Dubas from the team, they presented the Wayne Simmons, like the two kids with the two little mini sticks.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that so much. And they're daughters too, you know, and they gave them the stick. It actually said so much, you know, in that gesture, you know, that the Leafs, you know, Montreal's always been the class, you know, the standard when it comes to celebrations and stuff. I thought the Leafs did a really, really good job with this one. And I loved that moment. I thought that was so sweet. And the other thing that I loved is how they talked to teammates from other teams that he was on. And they sent him messages that they posted with that video. And I really, really thought that was a nice touch also.
And I loved too, but one thing I loved and didn't love, I love those t-shirts that the team came up with, the players.
Yeah. I didn't love that they didn't give us
exactly.
All.
Yeah.
They should have, because the Raptors give t-shirts to everybody for every little thing. Like, how come they can't give us a t-shirt? Jeez.
To say that it's like we were there on that night for his 1,000th game celebration. Like, I don't know. I don't know how they don't think of these things, the marketing team there at MLSE. Anyways, who's number one?
All right. Well, number one is no question, Austin Matthews versus Columbus, scoring his 40th goal of the season on a wraparound and getting it past goalie Elvis Merzlikins. He ties Daryl Sittler with his fourth 40-goal season in franchise history. And of course, since then, he's potted another five. And no short order, he should be at the 50-goal mark. Well, you know, I guess a couple players might catch up to him a little bit now over the next two games. But honorable mention to Matthews' attempt at the Michigan versus the Canucks and Thatcher Demko as well, because we thought that was a really good try.
Yeah, that he almost got it in there.
Almost got it.
Yeah, but this guy is just amazing. I mean, the fans really need to appreciate what we're seeing here. It's been a long time to have a superstar like this on the Toronto Maple Leafs. Like, it's just insane what he's doing, and we really need to take it all in. I hope a lot of the listeners out there are able to actually see him live too, because it's just amazing when he's on the ice, like what he does. And we sit normally our seats are a little bit farther up, so we're witnessing his greatness from farther away. Can't imagine what it is like down closer to the ice. Actually, speaking of that,
well, we can because we have witnessed that when we were on some of our road trips when we actually get to sit closer.
We had our one wonderful moment there in Vegas. That was great. But one person, actually, Gord Stellick, mentioned on The Fan after the game yesterday, he said that there was some suggestion that if the platinum seat people don't get to their seats by the end of the first period, it should be MLSE should make a rule to say that people from the upper bowl get to go and sit down there.
Oh yeah. If that happened, they definitely would get back to their seats quicker.
Exactly.
That's for darn sure.
Yeah, because it looks horrible with all those empty seats again going back to that usual thing. But yeah. So definitely worthy of number one.
For sure. Yeah. He's definitely having a great season. And for us, there is no doubt he is going to get 50, as we just said, and possibly beat Rick Vive's franchise record for goals also.
Yeah.
Anyway, we could go on and on about AM34 and his greatness, but we've got to get into the trade deadline discussion and our segment, The Third Period.
Yeah, so it's going to be lots of fun. Not quite what we were expecting to be maybe looking for a goalie, but anyways, I have to admit, first of all, on trade deadline day, I always take the day off work hoping for something big to happen. And normally it hasn't happened in the last few years, but we've been pretty quiet when it comes to the trade deadline because on our show, because things are always changing. So we've kind of, it's a week away now. So we've kind of left it to this episode of the show. And a month ago, if you would have said that the Leafs need to look for a goalie, I would have not believed it. And I still don't. So, but what do you think, Sil, the Leafs need to address the most at this deadline? What's your number one thing?
Oh, definitely number one, beyond a doubt, is still D, for sure. Yeah. We need somebody more experienced that can, you know, basically move people from in front of the net, you know, without, you know, causing any damage, but strongly net front presence.
Yeah.
Because right now the guys that they have doing it are all they're doing is screening the goalies, which make their job a lot harder. And they're not actually, you know, basically
screening and
getting,
putting pucks into the net for them too.
Yeah, exactly. Cause they're not in the right position.
Yeah.
So there's all these basically, you know, tipped in things that are going off of our people. It's not a good look. Definitely defense is huge. And, you know, it's interesting, you know, we harped on Jake Muzzin all season long about how bad he's been playing this year, which he has not been great, but it's a huge hole.
Yeah.
Like that's how bad things are.
That really says it all. Yeah. Yeah. You know? The fact that you notice him this much now for how long he's been out, few weeks. And they're really missing him, regardless if he was at only 50%.
Yeah.
He made a difference. And yeah, I have to agree. I mean, a lot of my choice was D as well. And even though we did get Lyubushkin, which is...
No, and he's been good.
Yeah. Yeah. But we need somebody else that can play top four because unfortunately for me, Liljegren and Justin Hall don't cut it.
No,
definitely not Liljegren playing with Riley. It's just not working. We were a guest on a show for a Leaf Talk with Mike in Buffalo. If the listeners out there know him, Mike Augello, I think is the last name. I got to get this right. Anyhow, he on the show, somebody came on and said that the Riley is the one that's really causing the defensive issue. And I'm like, no, I'm like, if you look at Liljegren, like he needs to adjust to the way, like they need to have more communication, better communication between the two. Let's just say that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so it's Mike Augello is his last name that I was on the show on the Leaf Talk after the game versus Arizona. But
yeah, that was on Twitter Spaces.
Yeah, and we just talked about that pairing, and it's just I don't know. They got to find somebody for. I mean, this is Liljegren's first full season too. To be up on the top pairing with Riley, is a little bit too much, in my opinion.
I agree, and this I wouldn't say that it could never work, but it's not a Band-Aid solution that you should expect to work with a really inexperienced defenseman, and try to mesh their styles. You know, this is like an off-season training camp type of move.
Yeah,
that shows how desperate Keefe is.
Yeah.
You know, if that's what he's going to, obviously he doesn't feel like he has many options. Yeah. And they've tried him up and down. So.
Oh, yeah. No.
Yeah.
And then Justin Hall they've been okay with Brody there, but still think.
And actually, that's the reason why Liljegren is playing up with Riley.
Yes. Yeah.
Because Justin Hall is, you know, much more experienced. He's not a young guy anymore, and he still needs to be shielded with a player that is much more defensively capable.
Right. So from all this discussion that we just said, it just shows that we need D. We need a defenseman at this trade deadline.
100%.
That is that can do, as you said, in front of the net, clearing it. in a good way, and making and blocking shots too would help. So I know other report, obviously everybody else has been talking about goaltending, which I think is, I mean, the possibilities there. I just don't think with the salary cap and being a flat cap, I don't think we can, and we don't want to give up any of our good prospects, young prospects. Like, and there's no guarantee that that goaltender is going to come in here and just be fantastic for us, right? So I just think we got to go with what we have. Play even that Joseph Wall played well in those few games. He's come back from injury now in the few games he had with us earlier in the season. So if Schalgren plays okay, like, that's good. Give him a few games. Bring up Joseph Wall for a few games. In between, hopefully Mrazek will get his confidence back. But the team needs to come together and play better defense in front as well. So what do we got for for a forward? I don't think. I mean, some people are saying that we need more offense, but I don't.
Well, and I have actually heard that they all also one of the areas that they could look to bolster is the fourth line. Strengthening that a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, potentially, but that would be like more of a fringe type move.
Yeah.
If they did that. Yeah. As looking at goalies.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. It is definitely a need, but the question with that is, you know, who are you going to get that's going to be any better than what we already have?
Exactly. Yeah. Like, you know, the two names that I have here that I've heard recently are this Anton Forsberg in Ottawa. Again, and he's got a salary of $900K because, again, we have to look at the salary cap and as to who's coming in, who's coming out. He's 29 years old, I got here. But he's a UFA, and Dubas has said he has no interest in, trading for a rental. Mm-hmm. Like, to trade, and especially like to trade his number one pick specifically too. Not that these goalies would be number one picks, because that would not be the case, but he doesn't want a rental for this year's number one pick. So,
well, except that might have been before things have gotten even worse, so he might be pushed to the fact that he might have to
something
that he doesn't really want to do.
Yeah, the other guy, which he basically stoned us in Arizona when we played down there, was becoming the next Marc-Andre Fleury, is Carl Vimelka, who beat us when, and again, he's a Czech goalie, 25 years old, again, $900K. As a salary, he's a restricted free agent. And then there's Braden Holtby, and he signed at $2 million for this year. He's only 32 years old. I was surprised at that, but he's played pretty good. He's had a record of, plays for Dallas. We might see him tomorrow night. I don't know. He's got, 10 wins, 10 losses, 0.913 save percentage. So he's actually been pretty good. Out of the three, I'd probably take him because he's won a Stanley Cup.
Yeah, except I do also remember him in other playoffs past where he was not that great and reminded me a little bit of, you know, the knocks that we had on Freddie not, you know, keeping in that one last one that we need saved.
Yeah.
So
again, there's no guarantee. That's why I don't think we should really, that Dubas should do that. I think he should be addressing the blue line a lot. But what do we think? Who do you think? Like, for D, who do you think that we should be getting?
Like, the one person that I've heard, obviously, like, I'm wondering about, you know, somebody from Anaheim. So, we've heard, you know, talk about Josh Manson, but also Hampus Lindholm. He, I think, is probably, like, the number one target that they would love to get. You know, he's got 22 points, 5 goals, 17 assists. And he's an even plus minus, you know, he's around that 28-year-old range. So it's a good,
he's a little younger than
age range for, you know, where our team is right now.
Yeah. I mean, out of the two, again, it is Anaheim. I was looking at two. I'd prefer Manson just because he brings a little bit more grit, I think. Although Lindholm, he does play on the PK too. Apparently, he does. He's really good that way. But he's a Manson is a right shot D, so I think he would pair better with Riley that way. But in both cases, both of these guys have high salary caps, so there would have to be like a third team involved if something happened.
Either and, that, or they'd have to keep some salary.
Yeah, and they're both UFAs, so again, it's going to be a rental probably because you don't. I don't think we could have the money to re-sign either one of them. So, but those are the big names, I guess, that are coming up. One guy, I through some research, one guy that I found that was interesting that is much younger, but is on Columbus. His name is Andrew Peak, and he's 23 years old, right shot D. He signed for another year at $787,000, which is right in the ballpark of what Kyle Dubas and Brandon Pridham sign. And basically, he's physical. He has 140 hits and 122 block shots this season. He could replace, in my opinion, he could replace Hall or Dermott. But he's more of like a steady, just a stay at home defenseman. Yes, he doesn't have, he's only 23, so he's young. But I don't know. I was kind of interested in that being that he's, that type of stay at home defenseman that, I think bring him in, not to say that he would go right on the number one pairing right away, but you could put, obviously you'd put Brody back up with Riley. And then when Muzzin comes back, I just thought, you know, he could, this young guy could be like kind of go under Muzzin as a number four. And
do you know, is he like a homegrown prospect for them? Like, is he one of their draft picks, or did they pick him up
somewhere else? That I don't
because
know.
That makes a difference too as to how available somebody like that would be, given that they're so young, right?
Yeah. That one I didn't look up, but I don't know. I'll look it up now while we're going on here. But yeah, so he's a guy that I thought was interesting. And then in Chicago, there's been talk of this Calvin DeHaan. He's a little bit older. He plays both left and right defense. But again, his salary, he's 30 years old, but his salary is $4.5 million, and he's also a UFA. So, again.
Well, I mean, if they're UFAs, depending on what the prorated amount is for the rest of the season, it probably could be doable, but they wouldn't be looking to sign them after. It would be like just clearly just a rental situation. But like you said, I think he would prefer to not go the rental route if he doesn't have to.
If he doesn't have to, yeah. So
yeah. But I mean, they're going all in this year.
That's the thing, right? Yes. Yeah. They say they're going all in.
Every year from now, like for the next two or three, they're going to have to go all in. So
yeah, because they're wasting another year of these really great players like Matthews, Marner, and Nylander, which we haven't discussed much at all, but he's not impressed me either the last little while. No, so
he's definitely lost his, you know, man on a mission.
Yeah.
He's not looking quite like he was at the beginning.
No, exactly. So. And I think this Andrew Peak is a homegrown. I think he was drafted by Columbus. He's been in the Columbus organization since 2019-20 was his first season with Columbus.
So I'd be surprised, given that they're going to be kind of rebuilding, if they would give up on a young kid like that.
No, it depends.
I don't know who's got an impact, right?
Yeah. Well, we'll see. But yeah, so those are the possibilities that we think of for the trade deadline. It's going to be fun. So we're recording this show, like I said earlier, on Monday, and the Leafs got 23 games left now. So the standings, we're still in third in the Atlantic, only 2 points ahead of the Bruins. We might be looking at a wild card spot, never mind going after the first spot because we have no more games in hand. So, yeah.
You know, one thing that I had heard, which kind of, I don't know if it fits in this conversation here right now, but I heard Gord Stellick talking about this, back to the goaltending again, that our goaltending is the worst it's ever been since 1982-83.
Mm. Oh, wow. Maybe they should talk to Rick Vive then.
But the thing that's amazing to me is, and we finished at the, basically at the bottom of the standings or close to it.
Yeah.
Then. So that just tells you how much they're wasting our firepower. Yeah. You know, the fact that we are still at the top, towards the top end of the league, and we're close to the top spot and held the top spot for a while. You know, that is basically, we are at the point where they're not able to outscore how bad the goaltending is now.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the difference between our team and the team in the 80s, is that they couldn't score. They only had one person scoring, which was Rick Vive.
Which was Rick Vive, yeah.
Practically.
Yeah.
You know? So that team wasn't talented enough to score these problems. Our team so far has. So anyways, hopefully in the upcoming schedule and with the trade deadline, they're going to start sorting things out. But they definitely have to do something because...
Oh yeah,
the players themselves are not going to be happy if they don't.
Yeah, for me, I mean, if they don't do nothing, I don't know. I look at it big picture. Like if Kyle Dubas doesn't do anything at the trade deadline, I'm like thinking to myself, is that one trade, if they were going to give up whatever they give up, let's say a bigger thing, if it be one of the prospects like Matthew Nyes or Topi Niemelä, which I've been told it's like a no-go for the Leafs. But if it ever like, I don't know, is that one trade going to bring us to the Stanley Cup final? I don't think so personally. So that's why if he doesn't do anything, I'll be a little bit upset, but not that upset. Because our goal for us, obviously, is to get to that at least to the final four. And I don't know that they'd have enough by making just one let's say larger move. I'm okay if he just does the like a smaller move on defense if he can get it, or the fourth line bit. But what's going on with the schedule next?
So let's look at what's coming up. And I think the schedule is going to get a little tougher. So we'll see if that is good or bad, because we tend to play down to, you know, teams that are lower in the standings. So we're facing some better competition. Maybe that's going to be good for us. So it's definitely a tougher start with Dallas coming in here tomorrow night and Carolina on Thursday. And then we go on the road to Nashville on Saturday night. Then there's a little bit of a break with the trade deadline on the 21st. And then we play a couple more teams that we should definitely beat, which is the New Jersey Devils and the Habs. Come on, let's just freaking finally beat the Habs, okay?
Yeah.
Talk about a team that is basically turning things around. It's like, it seems like that team, all they have to do is have a revolving door of coaches, keep firing a coach every year, and then they can turn it around.
Yeah, that's about it. But yeah, no, I mean, Dallas coming in on the Tuesday, it's like they're in a playoff race, basically, to get in. And so they're definitely going to be going all out to win the game tomorrow night. And Carolina, of course, Freddie's going to be back again with a full house. So I'm sure he'll be on his game. He's right now he's number one in the league and for goalies and save percentage. So I guess he's not that bad, Leafs Nation. And
but you know, that goes back to what we were saying, is that I just do wonder, you know, if it's the type of team in front of you plus the coach, who knows?
Yeah. And then Nashville, again, they're in a race as well, up in the playoffs race. So that's going to be a tough game. And then I guess towards the end of March, we have some big games versus division games versus the people we are chasing, the teams we're chasing, the Panthers and the Bruins. And then the Bruins are chasing us. So that will be interesting. And I'm still looking forward. That Michael Bunting yesterday, the way he came.
Yeah.
The way he brought his Scarborough feistiness there at the end of the game when I think it was Dylan Cousins that took a shot at Matthews afterwards. I'm glad that Bunting went after him anyways afterwards. And
yeah, he went after his guy. Yeah, you know, they're exactly. Having a bit of a bromance, those two.
Yeah, I like that, standing up basically for, even though Matthews can take care of himself. But yeah, I like that. And I'd like to see more of it. It doesn't matter if it's a penalty. as long as it's obviously not a headshot or anything like that. But yeah, and then we have a game versus the Jets, and that's the return of that game way back earlier in the season when the Jets beat us in Winnipeg and Mark Scheifele was going on in the dressing room about winning the Stanley Cup that night. And it looks like Winnipeg might not even make the playoffs. So I'm glad they enjoyed that moment. And then we go on the road to Philly, basically. And then we got some, it's a little bit longer, actually, this schedule before our next show. We got the Florida spring games going back to back, April 4th versus Tampa and April 5th versus the Panthers. So we're really going to know a lot. Let's just say by the time we go to our next show, we're going to know a lot as to where this team is, our Leafs, where they're going to be placed in the standings.
And let's just hope that the trajectory is going in the other directions. So yeah. Anyway, so they definitely could be a bit different when we do our next show. So we might have one or two new additions in the lineup. We'll have a few divisional games, and it's definitely going to make it more clear with respect to the standings.
Yeah, and another thing that could happen is that Austin Matthews could hit that 50-goal mark. Pretty sure it doesn't matter the two games, he's going to hit it, and that's going to be some night. I was looking at the schedule. It's probably not going to be at home that he does it, but anyways, it's going to be some. I wonder, like, when Rick Vive scored the 50, I remember I was eating an orange at the time. I actually still remember it, Leaf fans. I was eating an orange, and I threw the orange peels up in the air because I was only like... I was only like 13 years old. So, yeah, so that's a story anyhow. And so we got lots to look forward to still. We'll break it all down on our next show. And one final reminder, just to be sure to leave us a rating or a review and let us know what you think of the show. It's very easy on Apple and Spotify. If I can figure it out, you can. And it's important to for our show to get more exposure as a source for Leaf content. And we thank you for taking the time.
And another way to help us out is by visiting us at Ko-fi, ko-fi.com. You can follow us there. And if you choose to, you can support us by buying us a coffee. Everybody knows Chris loves her coffee. Yeah. Any donation goes towards helping us produce the show and making it even better for you. You can find the link to our Ko-fi page on our show notes or in any of our social media profile pages.
Yeah, we thank all of our healthcare workers and first responders for everything they do. Every single show, it's getting better. The pandemic, things are getting back to normal. I guess if we remember what normal is, but we thank our healthcare workers and first responders for getting us to this point right now.
Mm-hmm. So enjoy the trade deadline, everybody. Enjoy the games, and we'll be talking Leafs again in a few weeks. Go Leafs, go.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.